The Guardian.
Hello all, James Richardson here, and before we get started with today's edition of Football Weekly, I'm going to point you in the direction of our sponsor Squarespace. For more about building beautiful websites, go to squarespace.com. And now, on with the show. Euro 2016, day four, and magical scenes in France with Ibra, Kadabrek, and Italy making Belgium disappear in Lyon. Kings of Lyon, the Azzurri, with a wonderful performance. We'll be talking about that, and also Sweden failing to deal with the Hulan problem against Ireland, and Spain getting that late winner against the Czech Republic. Plus, we'll be looking ahead to the final day of match day one, featuring that Habsburg derby, Austria-Hungary, and Iceland-Portugal. It's all coming up in this Euro 2016 Football Daily.
There you go, Simon Burnton. You've earned this.
Thank you very much. Right. Don't mind if I do.
Hi, listeners. Hi. Simon Burnton just joining myself and James Horncastle. Bonsoir, James.
Buonasera.
Exactly. At the end of day four of these Euros, and at the end of what I think was the game of the tournament so far. Probably can drop the so far in that game of the tournament time. What do you think?
I'll reinsert the so far, and then I'll agree with you wholeheartedly.
All right, great.
Spain, Czech Republic was remarkable.
You're funny. No, I mean, it's in these days of, you know, changing ways and that, you know, Brazil, for example, just knocked out the Copa America. They're not Brazil anymore. Spain, they had a go at being Spain, but, you know, we saw them again. They're not. But today we saw a team coming out and living up to a national stereotype.
Yeah, Italy totally.
The apotheosis of that.
They Italied the hell out of that tonight, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was a fantastic defensive performance. I mean, you've
got
to ask questions of Belgium's attack, particularly Lukaku, who had a really bad performance today. Really bad. Mm. But still, they were just in the right place at the right time, as they so often are. And, you know, that people talk about taking, you know, one or two players from a club and putting them into an international team and saying that makes a big difference. But, you know, here you had a whole unit and they look so well oiled.
From Juventus.
From Juve, yeah.
Ooh, I think we've got a real Italian on line one, Filippo Maria Ricci. Oh, Pippo. Oh, Filippo Maria Ricci, what a night to be.
Oh, what a night, unexpected night.
Yeah, right, for anyone who's wondering...
Never trust Italy, eh?
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah, but in a good way. This after Italy beat Belgium, one of the pre-tournament's favourites, 2-0, an early goal from Giaccarini, and boy, that was unexpected, and then that late finisher... From Pele, wow!
Yeah, you know them quite well. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But rank that performance from Italy with other Azzurri sides. How does that stand with the greater Italy games you've seen?
I think it stands very high because this Italy is very poor. No one was expecting us to do that well because if you look at the lineup, it's an absolute disaster. We're playing with Pelé, that wasn't even finishing as a starter at Southampton, and Eder, that I think he didn't score for the last 6 months, apart from being a Brazilian that we drafted in, I don't know why. But anyway, and then we lost Verratti, we lost Marchisio, we had to get in De Rossi, and we have basically a great defense, the famous BBC, that is not Bale, Benzema and Cristiano. It's Barzagli, Bonucci and Chiellini, the real one. And then we just had that. We had a great keeper, but nothing more than that. So it's really unexpected. And we had a wonderful game. That's I was the first one to doubt, to be honest.
Well,
I thought Belgium was a decent team. And Italy really had nothing, you know, to show. But They proved me wrong, to put it in a way.
Do you know what? A lot of people have been saying classic Italian defending, and it was some magnificent bits of, you know, cynicism at times, or great positioning, or just reading the game brilliantly. But there was also something that we don't often see from Italy, and that was the amount that they committed forward. I mean, Italy sat so far forward through much of that game. It was really not in their nature.
No. I think this is what Conte can bring, obviously, because... It's not just defending. You know, he did a wonderful job with the Juventus, and then obviously Allegri took it perhaps on another level at a European stage. But for sure, Conte has his own ideas and his own football, and we saw it tonight. Because, you know, I live all year round with Atletico Madrid and the Cholismo thing. You know, Cholo Simeone, and how good is he to make normal players to perform at a greater standard. And I think we've seen that tonight. This is Italy. If you ask, I think, your audience how many of these players they know, and they will say, you know, Chiellini, Buffon, but more or less that's it. There were at least six or seven players that perhaps they've never heard about. And we did well against a team that was supposedly to do very well. I think this is three or four days ago I was talking to Casillas and I said, I never, you know, never trust Italy, never when never underestimate Italy. And this is the respect we have, for sure, but with this kind of team that we were fielding, I didn't know what to expect, but for sure I wasn't expecting a performance like this one.
No. Can they keep it up, people?
This is the great question, because in the World Cup we started very well beating England, if you remember, and then we dissolved, we vanished. So I hope they can keep it up, but this was a surprise.
All right, well, next up, it's a tasty matchup with Sweden, which means the Azzurri against Zlatan. Ooh, that's going to be a sizzler. That's on Friday.
Yeah, and I think Ibrahimovic scored his best international goal against us, you know, in the Euro 2004.
Yeah.
And apart from that, at international level, you know, both with clubs or national team, he never did that well or compared to how much he's winning at club level, at country level.
All right, then, people. I know you've got to get back in your Cinquecento and drive around the roundabout, honking your horn for the next few hours.
Yeah.
There we go. So you get back on the klaxon, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Okay. Na-na-na. This is the klaxon going already.
People. All right. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Filippo Maria Ricci of the Gazzetta dello Sport. Do you know what we haven't talked about yet?
What's that, Chimpo?
Bonucci.
Bonucci power.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who needs Pirlo when you've got Leo bombing them forward? I mean, that's been one of the great evolutions in his game. After a year at Juventus, everyone thought, well, let's just man-mark Pirlo and we'll stop them. And, Conte went up to Bonucci in training and said, can you bring it out from the back? Can you ping these passes forward? And he's the best in the game at it, without a doubt. And, I thought he was the man of the match, not only for that range of passing, but for some of the interventions that he was making. It's not hard to see why Conte would like him at Chelsea, isn't it?
Can he get him at Chelsea?
No.
Not going to happen?
No, not going to happen.
All right. Good news for the muggers of West London, isn't it? Because, he punches out people who try and ship...
Speaking of punches...
Oh, yeah.
Antonio Conte had a bit of a...
fat lip.
Yeah, after some over-exuberant celebrations from Simone Zaza.
If you put your team... I bet you're putting your team of the tournament already together, aren't you, Simon? Because you're quite a... You like to plan ahead.
I haven't given it too much thought.
All right. I mean, already you've got Modric probably in there, and Iniesta, and maybe Neuer. Bonucci's in there, isn't he?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Sure. And there were several candidates today. The two fullbacks, they'd put in a shift. I know that Damian didn't last that long. He came off after about an hour. But they were wingers and fullbacks. I thought Parolo
yep.
looked good, contributed really well in attack, and two fabulous goals, really. And for all that, you know, we'll look at their defence, we'll concentrate on their defence, but both goals are really beautifully created and beautifully taken.
Mm. And straight off the training ground as well. And I think that's everything about Antonio Conte, because if you look at his career, you know, he sort of recognised that he was a limited midfield player who didn't really deserve to play for Juventus. And if he was going to be a success there, he had to take on all the information possible to better himself. And that's his entire approach to coaching. And it's, you could say he's the perfect coach for this Italy team, given it is the least talented group of players. You know, he's someone who gives them all these kind of solutions. They memorize all these different schemes. And yeah, you talk to the players that, you know, they say if like one thing doesn't work, they've already got a plan B, plan C. And yeah, I think you saw that tonight. There was lots of variation in that Italy performance.
But also, you talk about lack of talent, and you know the Belgian squad is brimming with it, and it'll be seen tonight as a victory of coaching as much as anything else. Mm. But you know, that Jacquarini goal was technically it was delicious. I mean, yeah. the control, the calmness of the finish, and the pass over the top. Obviously, I mean, it was fabulous. There's not a lack of skill there.
No, I mean, on Sky Italia, they were calling him Jacquarino by the end of the of the performance.
It's possibly a little exaggerated. Yeah. It was a nice goal, but in other regards, perhaps not the most Sambresque of performances. But just such elegant simplicity from Italy, from the kickoff, pretty much. I mean, it was almost like a lesson on how to just get out there and directly win a football match. Sweden up next, who had that 1-1 draw with Ireland. People saying there that he was expecting a little bit more of Sweden, but it was Ireland who looked like they really should have taken 3 points, arguably, from this game. Nick Ames was there at the Stade de France for this match. Let's get a quick word with him.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening to you, Nick. Why are they not letting you out?
I've not let myself out, actually, to be honest. I was so intent on watching the Italy game, and there's not any good pubs in Stones Throw, so I've locked myself in the bowels, so to speak.
All right, nice one. All right, well, you had quite the special game there, a terrific atmosphere between the Swedish and Irish fans ahead of the match, and a pretty thrilling encounter, was it, for you in the stadium?
Yeah, good encounter, and yeah, as you say, great atmosphere. It was a sea of yellow and green, and Ireland were, as you saw, really quite forceful and quite creative and inventive in that first half. They're sometimes a bit unfairly typecast as being quite artisan, aren't they, and quite workmanlike, but I thought they popped it around really nicely, did their hard running and the odd direct ball for Shane Long as well, but they really created chances. And I thought there were two things. The fullbacks got forward superbly, especially Robbie Brady, whose left foot was a joy for the whole afternoon. Coleman, of course, who created Houlihan's wonderful goal. And I thought Jeff Hendrick was fantastic in there. He's just come back from injury and been a bit laboured before that. But he really commanded things in midfield, made lots of really intelligent runs, hit the bar. Maybe should have won the game, actually, shortly after Kieran Clark's unfortunate own goal. 2 or 3 minutes before the equaliser, I was just commenting to myself how frustrated Ibrahimovic was starting to look. And he always sort of has this sort of air of sort of tolerance and forbearance, I think, sometimes when he's playing for Sweden, because he knows his teammates on his level, and he's sort of, you know, doing his best to muck in and cajole them along. But a few passes have been going astray. He was just starting to shrug and you know, pout a little bit. And he himself got dispossessed quite easily a few times. Then, of course, they fall asleep a bit. Ibrahimovic gets to the byline. Kieran Clark couldn't do much else. I think he had Seb Larsson waiting behind him. And it was harsh on Clark, because I thought he in particular marshalled Ibrahimovic wonderfully in that first half. Mm. But it just shows that when you do have a player like that, he can come up with that moment. And the way in which Sweden's players all ran to Ibrahimovic after that, I think, showed exactly what it meant to them and exactly how much they probably felt he'd bailed them out with that little burst.
I'm a legend. I always deliver. Next up, Nick, you're off to where? Austria-Hungary.
I will be at the Habsburg Derby, yes. As we like to call it, as history buffs. It must be the first match played at a European Championships that when you say Austria-Hungary, sounds like one country. So
yeah.
But it is an interesting one. It's got some resonance. It sort of feels like you should be watching it in black and white or sepia or something like that, doesn't it? Because obviously we've had those fantastic sides of the 30s and the 50s and the big shared history. But I think Austria in particular are very relevant to the present. I mean, we all know about David Alaba, who for Austria plays in midfield. I think he'd like to be playing in the long term rather than stuck out at left back for Bayern Munich, and he runs things, but they've got Fuchs, you know, Arnautovic, Junizovic, players like this, and they're classic dark horse fodder, aren't they, really? Mm. And I think Hungary, I mean, they've got the same air of faded glamour, but they haven't got the stars. They've got a few good young players and have a bit of momentum after going through the playoffs, but I don't think anyone really can make too strong a case for them, to be honest.
I guess we'll see on Tuesday in Euro 2016. Nick, thank you so much. We'll catch up with you soon.
Nice one. Cheers, James.
Thanks, Nick. Nick Ames there. Simon, you like a goal. How about that Hulan strike?
Lovely strike. And Sweden didn't have a shot on target all game. I know that, you know, the own goal was forced. It's not like it wasn't one of those really sinful ones where a defender puts it in for no good reason. But to score, to fail to win, despite not conceding a single shot on target in the entire match, that hurts.
Mm. And yet there were so many positives there that surely Ireland have got to feel quite optimistic going forward. It's a tough group, but still.
Yeah, and there were plenty of positives. And they weren't really expected to dominate as much as they did, particularly that first half. And it was an excellent performance, and there was a lot of to take out of it, you know, a lot of encouragement to take out of it.
Mm.
Tough group, though.
Tough group. All right. Now, the early game today saw Spain taking on Czech Republic in the same group, of course, as Turkey and Croatia. Spain, yikes. They left it late, 87th minute. Gerard Piqué, Andrew McDonald tweets in, could we call that a Piqué blinder?
Yeah. Well, they do tend to leave it late. In fact, 6 of their last 9 goals Ooh. At the Euros have been scored in the last 10 minutes. And
right.
Spain just wear teams down, don't they? They have a hard time scoring, but in the end, all that possession, which makes their opponents run around and tires them out, it ultimately pays dividends. But, again, quite symbolic that it was a centre-back rather than a centre-forward scoring the goal, which has been the problem ever since David Villa no longer plays. And Iniesta, along with Modric, as you were saying earlier, just wonderful today. And I think it's quite a big tournament for Iniesta, because in the past, the leaders for Spain have been Puyol, and then it was Xavi. Both of those are now gone, and he's seen as the kind of technical leader of this team to take them on. I think it's probably going to be his tournament in that sense.
Ooh. I tell you what, Sid Lowe wants a word. He's on the line from southern France. Sid, you're in Toulouse.
Hello, Jimbo. I am in Toulouse, yeah.
Yeah, but you soon won't be because you're waiting for your train.
No, I'm about to get a train back to Bordeaux.
All right. Hey, you were there to see Spain taking on the Czech Republic. It was a damp afternoon, and I got to say the Czechs almost rained on Spain's parade,
They did, yeah. I mean, it was close, wasn't it? Was it 87 minutes, I think, when Piqué finally scored? And for what it's worth, I thought Spain actually played really quite well, but there was that doubt that we've had kind of consistently, which has been going over and over again with Spain. I mean, even going back when they did win the World Cup, when they did win the European Championships, well before they went to Brazil and didn't win the World Cup, does the play produce as many goals as it should?
Yeah.
Often the doubt is whether the forwards are good enough. I actually think there's a more nuanced argument which says that the way they play denies space for forwards, and so actually playing up front for Spain is harder than it looks.
Right.
And if you look at the list, you can always judge it just from the list. Look at the people who played up front for Spain. And since David Villa, and I would say an early Fernando Torres, most of them just haven't convinced. You know, Soldado, Negredo, Paco Alcácer, Michu, Diego Costa, Cesc as a false number 9, David Silva as a false number 9. I'm sure I'm missing players out, but you know, a whole load of players. And today they played 2 of them. They tried Morata and then Abdoulis came on, which is obviously a completely different type of player. And it took Piqué to score to get them the win. And this is the Piqué who Spain fans whistle occasionally.
Yeah.
Or some do anyway.
And yet, Iniesta, Silva, Cesc, Thiago, none of them have scored more goals for club and country than Piqué this season.
Really? I didn't know that. That's a great stat. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I thought Iniesta was brilliant today, though. I mean, Iniesta doesn't score goals, but he's great to watch, isn't he? There's a sort of a smoothness about him, and every pass seems precise. Everything he does seems right. And I know, obviously, it didn't produce a goal until the 87th minute, and it was his pass, but I thought his performance was brilliant.
Yeah. I did have that feeling, and this is, I think, what you were referencing before, that once again, they were like a band of novelists in search of a headline writer, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah,
it was all very long form. You wanted someone to just do a bullet point.
I think there's an element of that, and I think that's certainly fair. And I was toying with this, and I think I didn't write it, but I've got a horrible feeling I might have written it now, because obviously, for those who don't know, when you're live writing a match, you write a whole load of stuff, and then it doesn't actually go in the final piece. But I remember that kind of the old cliche about how possession is 9/10 of the law, and I think I wrote something like, that other 10% is a right bastard, and it always is for Spain. And that's the 10% that decides the game, even though, of course, it doesn't decide a game in a way. That's almost a short-term way of us looking at it, because the game is conditioned by everything, by all the play. And people say, well, how many of Spain's passes are relevant? Well, the answer, in a way, is all of them. But it is also true that, you know, if you take them in isolation, well, how many are decisive? Perhaps not so many. But I think with Iniesta, at least, you do get someone who's kind of aesthetic and lovely to watch, but is also the person who's I hate this word, but I'm going to use it anyway, who's kind of probing, who's trying to be incisive, who's trying to find a way through. Whereas that, I think that differentiates him from, for example, certainly from Cesc. I would say from some of their other kind of supposedly creative midfielders as well. He is the one that's actually kind of cutting through people in a way that perhaps others don't.
Right. Interesting. I want to talk to you about the future, Sid. How seriously should we take this whole De Gea story?
Seriously in that the story itself is quite serious.
Yep.
Seriously in that the story clearly has substance to it, allegedly. Seriously, not at all seriously in that, legally speaking, I don't think there's a major problem. And then, of course, the next question, which I suppose is where you're really going, is what influence does it have on the Spanish national team? I'm tempted to say not too much.
Right.
But
okay.
I mean, you know, the fact that he played today and he made a couple of decent saves, and the players certainly seem to think that, okay, this isn't, at least publicly, I mean, I must confess, it's difficult to know exactly whether this has an impact internally. I suspect not. To be honest with you, and at the risk of saying something which doesn't sound altogether pleasant, I think a lot of the Spain players will probably think, well, what's the big deal?
Right. Okay. Interesting. Interesting. Sid, in a word, Spain today, better or worse than you were expecting? Better or worse?
Better. Better. Okay. Definitely better. But with that doubt of okay, we've seen the difficulty that they have in getting the goal that they needed. I think ultimately this is a victory that came late rather than the game that they suffered in. But of course, when it starts to get late in the game, you do start to think, oh, hang on, maybe this can happen.
All right. Sid, you go get your train, and we'll catch up with you soon on the streets of Euro 2016. Do, 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 da, do, 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 the square space. A little bit of news from friendly Russia. From Russia with love, we could call this section. Russian MP, you probably saw this, Russian MP Igor Lebedev called on Russian football fans to keep up the good work. I see nothing wrong with football fans fighting. On the contrary, well done to our boys. Keep up the good work. Apparently this is a real account and not someone trolling.
Fist pump.
Fist pump. Vladimir Markin, meanwhile, is the fellow who said gay pride parades have made French police weak and unprepared for mighty, manly Russian hooligans. Apparently, he's a spokesman for... I've seen him described as a Russian top cop. I googled his name, and he also features in a news report as a spokesman for a Russian government investigative committee, saying that he wants an inquiry into whether the Americans ever went to the moon. He raised questions after the video from 1969's mission and a piece of lunar rock, which was brought back to Earth, you put your own inverted commas in there, went missing. So, he's a man.
Well, pretty disgusting and insensitive comments given what happened in Orlando last night.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Evidence-based Edu says you were asking for linguistic quirks of world football, and not in Europe, but in her own goal in Chinese. It's called a black dragon ball.
Yeah. I got an email from Andrea Schneider today, who's an Austrian fan,
yes,
who told me that when you put the ball through someone's legs and humiliate them, it's called a guackle. which is a pickle, apparently.
A pickle?
He didn't elaborate on why a pickle is humiliating. But,
right. Okay.
Maybe it puts you in a pickle.
But why would a nutmeg be humiliating? There's a lot of theories about why nutmeg, which we'd have time to get into now, because we are about to start talking about Tuesday's action. Only the two games for us. And you got Austria-Hungary and very much Iceland-Portugal, which we'll talk about in a second. Austria-Hungary, though. Simon, I know you're very excited about this one.
I'm certainly excited. I'm certainly on the scale of excitement.
Okay. Why?
Well, there's a bit of historical needle, obviously. Mm. Hungary qualified badly. They were third in Northern Ireland's group, which was a particularly weak group. So that doesn't reflect particularly well on them. And they've not won a game, not a game, in European Championship finals for more than half a century, since 1964.
Really? Only two of their players feature in any of Europe's top five leagues.
Yeah. So that's got a smart.
Hmm.
But they have one player. They've got Adam Nagy, who is like one of the hyped youngsters of Europe, having a year ago he'd never played a first-team game.
Is it Nagy or Nagy?
I have no idea.
I think it might be Nagy.
Okay, it's spelled Nagy.
However,
Hungarians are certain not to pronounce it Nagy.
Right. There's a fella from World's Strongest Man called Nagy, who's very much Nagy.
Is he?
He's also a rapper, isn't he?
That's Nas. Right. Okay. But as you were saying, Simon.
Yeah, a year ago he'd never played a first-team game. Yeah. And he's 21, I think, plays for Ferencváros as a defensive midfielder.
Mm-hmm.
And he's being linked with everybody. Oh. And I'm interested to see how he does.
Personally, I'm interested by untried fiery Videoton midfielder Laszlo Kleinheisler, who was called up for the two playoff games. And apparently he's got, a temper on him, but also quite a pair of feet. I don't know too much about Hungary.
We know Gábor Királi still wears those grey tracksuit bottoms.
And he'll be the oldest player in the history of the tournament when he plays tomorrow.
Wow.
Királi means king.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Austria. They keep talking about how there is a sense of euphoria back in Austria.
Is there?
A sense of enormous expectation on this team. They seem to be, it's kind of akin to Colombia in 94 in a team that has no history of great success in this tournament but has massive backing from back home, although they haven't been tipped by Pele. So they have this enormous pressure on their shoulders. They have been kind of tipped as dark horses by some commentators.
Mm-hmm.
They've got what looks a pretty easy first game, but with that kind of historical needle about it. So, I'm interested.
Good, okay. Christian Fuchs will captain them. You'd expect Alaba and Arnautovic to be in there from the start as well. Mark Janko, though, is he fit?
He's expected to be fit.
He's expected to be fit. All right, excellent. Well, are Austria for real? We're going to find out then against Hungary. The other match, as I mentioned, it's a romantic fixture, isn't it? Iceland, tiny North Atlantic nation, etc. But can those footballers contain the greatest player of the last 20 years? That's the question that we're going to find out on Tuesday. Cristiano Ronaldo. And is Chum Quaresma? A lot of Portuguese fans are really excited to see if those two can tear it up at this Euros.
If Quaresma's fit. He had a little bit of a niggle.
Did he?
Going into this game. Yeah, so he's a doubt.
Okay.
But they've got a lot of talent around Ronaldo, which was his criticism when they went out the last World Cup. He said, we could do with 2, 3, 4 more Ronaldos.
Right.
But now, they've got a great complement of midfield players, part of the team that got to the under-21 European Championship final a year ago and surprisingly lost to a limited Sweden side.
Have they found a striker?
Well, they've got Eder, who was with Swansea, I think, at the first half of this season and then went to Lille and did okay there. I think he has a celebration with a glove, like a Michael Jackson-style celebration. But he's the only centre-forward in the squad. They don't have any cover for him other than the best player of the last 20 years, Cristiano Ronaldo. But, I'm quite confident about this Portugal team because, we saw Ricardo Carvalho rolling back the years against England. He was very good.
Right. Apparently, people who know say that the two fellas are going to have the job of trying to keep it tight at the heart of the Icelandic defence are Ragnar Sigurdsson and Kari Arnason. Kari Arnason, who plays for Malmo, and as such was there when Cristiano Ronaldo banged six goals past Malmo in two games alone.
I was interested to read Lars Laugebach's roaring words of encouragement before this match. He said,
what did he say?
Normally the first game is a key match, but I don't think so this time. I think we can handle a loss.
Okay, yeah. All right.
There you go.
It's positive.
Yeah. Well, much of Iceland's third of a million population have decamped to France.
Yeah, 8% of that population.
Is it 8%? Yeah. Right.
But quite a lot of Portugal's population has also, well, previously decamped to France.
Oh, right.
France has a very high number of Portuguese expats. Indeed, 644,206 at last count.
Really?
And Paris is the third largest Portuguese city by number of Portuguese inhabitants.
Where's this game being played?
And not in Paris.
Oh, okay. But, you know, still.
There's a lot of them about.
Mm. Wow. Yeah. Okay.
If Iceland win, they will become the smallest nation ever to win at the European Championships, a title which is now being held by Wales, who beat Slovakia the other day.
Of course they did, yeah. All right, well, that's fascinating. If they do manage to get a result against Portugal, they'll be going bananas back home, but they won't be growing bananas, because it turned out that Filipe Clerc's story about them being the number one producer of bananas in the world, I think.
No, in Europe.
Or was it in Europe?
No, that was the
allegation. It's just plain not true.
I had read somewhere that they were the former number one.
It's a banana skin.
Ooh. Yeah.
I think they may at one point have led this particular field.
Before the Ice Age or something?
But no longer do.
Oh, okay.
Although who does, I have no idea.
Apparently it's Spain.
That would make more sense.
See what they do produce a lot of? Strong men. Hapthor Bjornsson. Hmm. And, you know, and other bigger names. John Paul Sigmundsson. And that. Magnus for Magnusson.
Yeah,
yeah.
The original.
Hmm. Anyway, right. Stefan Augustsson's in France. Hopefully we're going to catch up with him after this game to see what he thinks about how they got on. We did try today, listeners, having one or two issues with that. But hey, that's what's coming up then on Tuesday. Just the two games, but richly evocative matches they are. We'll be back Tuesday night with what is the conclusion of match day one. So hopefully you'll be joining us for that. Thanks, Simon Burton, for popping by.
Pleasure.
All right. There was a moment of doubt there. James Horncastle, thank you very much. Producer Pete, who's being Ben today. Let's just uncork ourselves another bottle and watch the night play out along with this fancy Eurostar music. See you in 24, listeners.
Gluck, 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 gluck.